If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Tonight's video is about this avid hiker in the state of Oregon at Silver Falls State Park, and what he encounters will blow your mind. Stay tuned. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. Now, let's get spooky. I've been an avid outdoorsman my entire life. I grew up in the hill country of Tennessee, and from the time I was young, my father taught me how to hunt and survive in the woods. It was part of life back home, and everyone had this same shared upbringing in my town. Although I enjoyed hunting as much as any of my friends, it was really the solitude and peacefulness that I found among the trees that really stuck with me as I grew older. When I turned 20, I took a job with the Parks Department at the Roan Mountain State Park. It wasn't anything too exciting. I was mostly a glorified tour guide for park visitors, but it gave me the chance to make a living spending my days out in some of the most beautiful wilderness I had ever seen. Even though I lost my job when the budget cuts came in 2020, I still had the experience of 2 years there and a nice bit of qualification on my resume that I could take elsewhere and continue my love affair with nature. Those were some of the fondest memories I have rattling around in my head. But even they're falling victim to this sinister black cloud that haunts my dreams these days. I'm getting a little ahead of myself, though. It's important for me to write this down. Maybe it'll help make sense of it all. Maybe it'll help me sleep at night. Maybe not, but it's worth a try. So I'm going to do it while I still can. A year ago, I decided that a change of scenery might do me good. I had spent most of 2020 working odd jobs while still trying to get back into a parks position. But there were no openings anywhere nearby. I had always heard great things about the Pacific Northwest, so I figured I'd take a couple of weeks and head out there to take a look around and see what it's like. In addition to the hike, I had also scheduled an interview with the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department before my planned return, so my spirits were high. I spent a month planning the long week hike into the backcountry of Oregon, anxious to see firsthand the massive redwoods I'd always heard about. Finally came the day I stepped off the plane and into the cool Oregonian air, more excited than I had expected to be, and I knew in my heart that this was going to be a hike I'd never forget. A first step in what I was hoping I could turn into a full chapter in my life. I had no idea how true that would end up being. I spent an hour at baggage pickup, and then another at the TSA office picking up the locked hard case containing my .44 Magnum revolver that my grandfather had given me on my 18th birthday. The same one I always carried into the wilderness. But even slogging through the endless tedium of bureaucracy didn't damper my enthusiasm. And by the time that I had received my car rental and turned the wheels away from the airport and onto the open road, I was smiling again. The moment I left my rental Jeep in the gravel parking lot at the trailhead and stepped onto that shadowed lush greenery at the Pacific Northwest, I was certain I had made the right decision. I had supplies and equipment to last me twice as long as my planned trek, and now I was already considering extending my hike a few days longer than planned. It was early September, and the temperature hovered right around 70 degrees during the day in the sun. Under the dense canopy of the old-growth forest, though, it was probably 10 degrees cooler. Remarkably, a gentle and steady breeze managed to make its way through the trunks of the pines and cedars that surrounded me, keeping the air light and fresh. Within 10 minutes of starting my hike, The small parking lot was lost to view behind me, and I was completely alone, surrounded by this primeval woodland. It was like something out of a Tolkien novel, and I could almost imagine rounding a hilly bend and stumbling upon a small village of halflings, going about their day oblivious to the outside world I had just left behind. I followed the well-maintained trail for another couple hours, only encountering one other hiker during that time, as they returned in the direction of the trailhead from their own excursion. From their lack of any gear more substantial than a small shoulder pack, I guess they were just out for a short walk. I saw them take quick note of my own considerable backpack and the handgun holstered across my chest, and thought for a moment that I saw something like concern flash behind their eyes. It might have been some subtle disapproval from the firearm, but I don't think so. It wasn't unusual for a hiker to go armed into the bush, especially when alone and in bear country. Regardless, if it had been there at all, it was gone in an instant later. We exchanged a friendly nod as we passed each other, but neither of us seemed willing to break the silence with our words, and so we continued on along our own paths, quickly lost to each other once again. There had been only one other car in the parking lot when I arrived, so I was fairly certain I was unlikely to encounter anyone again for the next week, something I was generally looking forward to. After another hour, I reached the offshoot trail that I had been expecting to follow it as it gently turned northly, growing less distinct and wilder as I went. The air was cool and damp, and the ground beneath my boots was soft and alternated between rock and mud as I progressed. Based on my research, this should be the head of the Old River Trail, which had been used for generations by trappers and fur traders. The course I had plotted would branch again in a couple of days and loop back around until I eventually returned to the main trail a few miles further along. It was a nice, comfortable track, and would give me plenty of time to enjoy these woodlands, so different than those in my native Tennessee, and yet so familiar at the same time. For the next couple days, I immersed myself in the forest, reveling in the solitude and the oneness I felt with all the living things around me. I set camp the first night beside a lazy stream that wound from somewhere above and carried icy cold waters, crystal clear and filled with small fish that darted back and forth in its currents. The second night, I set my tent up beneath an uncommon, though welcome, break in the high canopy above. Through the gap in the thick boughs above me, I watched in awe at the incredible amount of stars that lit the night sky, completely unobstructed by the light pollution that dimmed them to obscurity in my hometown. On the fourth morning, I woke with the dawn, stepping out of my tent and into the heavily shaded woodlands. I had a quick breakfast of some freeze-dried eggs and sausage, along with a steaming cup of instant coffee, both of which were surprisingly good. After I finished my second cup of coffee and attended to the rest of the morning routines, I broke camp and was moving again within an hour. There was an exciting spring in my step as I took to the nearly impossible trail on that morning, and the anticipation that I had been trying to keep in check since my arrival I now allowed to run free. This is the day I expected to reach an area of land that had been inexplicably and habitually avoided by trappers over the years, with them often taking a far more circuitous route around it, adding a day or two more to their travel. It was this very region that had first caught my attention and attracted me to this particular route. I didn't really expect to find anything of note, but the thrill of exploring what was essentially a forbidden zone for those men and women just added a level of mystery to my trip. According to what I read, there should have been an old layover cabin somewhere ahead of me, which I expected would provide some great photo opportunities for me, as well as a few more pages to add to my mental scrapbook. Overall, I expected it to be one of the highlights of my trip, akin to exploring an old Gold Rush-era ghost town. It was early afternoon when I caught sight of something unusual, something out of place, through the dense trees ahead of me. I had been particularly keeping an eye on my GPS, one of the high-end units I'd used on the job back in Tennessee. I'd uploaded my route to it before I left, and following the highlighted path on its LCD display made navigation simple in these strange forests. When the path grew wider and more defined, I was stunned to find that I was approaching what looked like a large cabin of modern construction. As I continued towards it and cleared the...
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Tree line. I found myself in a large clearing, devoid of trees but heavily overgrown by brush and young saplings. To my surprise, the similar brown arrowhead logo of the National Park Service was affixed on the front of the cabin, beside the partially ajar door, faded and somewhat obscured with fuzzy green moss. I was a little more than taken aback when I saw this, since I was certain that this area of wilderness was technically part of the Silver Falls State Park, and the National Park Service had no presence here. Aside from that, this apparent ranger station appeared to have been abandoned for some time, allowing nature to begin reclaiming the area. It had probably been a year or so since the grounds were last maintained, and within another two, all traces of the clearing would likely be completely eradicated, with only the decaying cabin and lack of growth trees to mark its existence. I double-checked the GPS unit, which had icons for all known ranger stations, but was even more confused when I could find none within 50 miles of this spot. Noting the location on my GPS, I took a few pictures of the exterior before stepping through the open door into the shadowed room. Dimly lit only by the few grimy windows inset into the timber walls. The interior was surprisingly sparse, with only a few desks positioned around a large space and a table in the center. I was astonished when my eyes lit upon an unlocked and open gun cabinet and found the rusting remains of two rifles and a shotgun in an otherwise empty rack. I had seen some reckless and irresponsible things during my time with the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation, but I'd never expect to find unsecured firearms just left in the open for anyone to stumble across in a ranger station. I grimaced and shook my head in dismay at this apparent display of government waste and neglect, snapping a few more pictures of the interior. If the corrosion hadn't appeared to have long since rendered the weapons non-functioning, I'd have been inclined to carry them out with me and turn them over to the rangers. As it was, I had no interest in adding another 20 pounds to my already heavy load, and they were clearly of no threat to anyone anymore. I'd just make mention of them to the park rangers when I returned, and let them decide what to do. Finding nothing else of interest, I left the cabin and continued my journey, leaving the oddity behind as I once again entered the dense trees. It was only after a half an hour before I found the remains of a layover cabin I had read about previously, but was disappointed to discover it little more than a collapsed wooden frame at this point, half buried under the weight of its long dead and fallen cedar. Honestly, I wasn't sure what I expected to find, but I think there was a small part of me that imagined the romantic notion of being able to stay the night in that long-forgotten cabin, not used in 100 years or more. I took a few pictures of the rotting timber frame, but my heart wasn't really in it. I had built this memory up in my mind for the last month, but the reality fell short of the expectations. Hitching my pack higher onto my shoulders, I tucked away my small camera and started once again along the path. Before I had taken more than a handful of steps, however, an aged wooden placard nailed to a tree near the remains of the layover cabin caught my attention. I frowned as I stepped closer, realizing that this had been some sort of sign, perhaps a navigational aid once used by the old trappers and fur traders. I could tell that it had been painted at some point, but the pigment had long since been erased by the elements. Still, squinting and looking across its surface at the angle allowed me to make out a few words that had been carved into its now wet, rotted wood. "Turn back. Death awaits beyond this point." I scrutinized the surface of the signboard for several minutes to ensure I had read it correctly, but each examination yielded the same results. I could feel that familiar tingle of excitement in the back of my mind, and realized that my muted anticipation had not been as diminished as I had thought at the less than impressive discovery of the layover cabin. I had finally reached the area of wilderness shunned by those who had traveled here before me, the place I had seen referred to as the Legion Gate in multiple images of hand-drawn maps. I had always wondered how it came by that name, but eventually dismissed it as one of those archaic peculiarities of bygone age. Still, it had a ring of menace about it, which only served to tug at my curiosity even more. Another few pictures, and then I was again on my way along the indistinct trail. I noticed as I proceeded farther how the ground had begun to dip lower, and I found myself traveling along a gradual descent that helped to quicken my pace. The trees were then growing larger and older than in the lands I passed through over the past few days, and the undergrowth had long since been choked out by the massive trunks of those I passed among now. Before long, the trail leveled out, and I felt I was now in the bowel of some great depression in the land, the terrain rising to a gentle ridge visible through the forested expanse surrounding me. The wildlife in this area seemed less prevalent and somehow subdued, the chittering and birdsong now only present as muted echoes in the distance. I could hear the gentle whispers of a nearby stream somewhere off to my left, but kept my feet to the trail. The GPS was having trouble locating my position now, presumably due to the heavy canopy cover overhead, and the last thing I wanted to do was to wander off trail and lose the path. I noticed that the breeze that had now been my companion throughout my hike was now absent, unable to find its way down the decline of penetrate and dense forestry. Although the atmosphere was still very cool in the ever-darkening shadows of the massive trees, it was no longer fresh and airy, now turning somewhat unpleasantly stale and musty. There was a damp scent of organic decay that seemed to pervade every breath, and I felt an odd melancholy now tinting my mood. It was then that I came upon another curious discovery. Ahead, mostly hidden by the crowded forest, I caught sight of a few flashes of bright color as I proceeded between the massive trunks. Soon, the colors resolved themselves into something unexpected. A small encampment of bright nylon tents surrounded a central fire pit. Though I couldn't detect the smell of a recent campfire, I still caught the lingering scent of burnt wood loitering in the air. When I grew close enough to get a good look, I subconsciously reached up and unsnapped the strap on my holstered Magnum, my eyes darting around the small clearing. The tents, though still upright, were torn and ravaged and the occupants nowhere in sight. Immediately, my thoughts went to a possible bear attack. Although I had read that grizzly bears had gone extinct in Oregon nearly in the 20th century, there was still a large population of black bears all over this area. I had seen fresh scat a few times over the past couple of days, but thankfully hadn't encountered any of the predators yet. I knew that the black bears in Oregon were larger and more dangerous than those I was more familiar with in my home state of Tennessee, and were a very real threat to people out here. I had seen the results of a bear attack once during my time with the Park Service, and it was enough to turn my stomach and fuel my sleepless nights afterwards. A family of four had been camping in a restricted area of the park known for its bear population. Despite the numerous warning signs at the ranger station and those posts all over the area, the father had thought it was a great adventure to go off trail and set up camp with his wife and teenage children. There hadn't been much left of them or their camp when we found them a week later. I don't like to think about it. The images are still there sometimes when I close my eyes. Cautiously, I unholstered my revolver and moved as silently as I could towards the camp, eyes never ceasing their scanning of the woods surrounding me, searching for any hint of movement. I doubted that whatever had done this was still nearby. A quick glance at the fire ring showed that it had rained at least once since the last campfire. The remaining ashes compacted and pocked with tiny craters. There had been no rain during my hike, so I thought that this was at least a week or more old. I ducked my head into a couple of the dome-style tents. Nothing that the bedrolls and supplies were still present, including large backpacks bearing the embroidered emblem of the USGS.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What the hell was the Geological Survey doing all the way out here? In the last tent, which, surprisingly, had not sustained the same damage as the others, I found some watertight cases marked with the same USGS emblems. Survey equipment, I guessed. This doesn't make any sense, I said aloud to myself, backing away from the tent and turning a slow circle to take in the whole area. The USGS routinely did tree surveys, so it wasn't uncommon for them to be in the wilderness. But I also knew they would have traveled armed and wary when camping in bear country. There were 5 2-man tents, not counting the one used to store equipment. So that meant there had to at least been 5 of them, and possibly as many as 10. I couldn't imagine a bear or even a family group being able to take them. Hell, with that many armed people, I can't imagine any of them who would have been taken. The only explanation I could think of was perhaps one of them had been hurt, and the entire group called for a helicopter rescue, leaving their equipment and supplies behind. The tents could very well be torn after they were extracted. There wasn't really anything to indicate an attack. No blood, no bodies, no pieces of bodies. They were just torn tents and the mysterious lack of occupants. Additionally, I could find none of the distinctive claw-tipped bear prints that I would have expected had there been an attack. In fact, aside from the numerous boot prints in the soft earth, the only animal tracks I could find around the campsite were those of some cloven-hoofed animal, likely from a large deer or elk. Those prints were prevalent through the camp, so I suspected the animal had wandered through in search of food at some point after it had been abandoned. Regardless, this new discovery, combined with the general oppressive feel of the whole place, had sapped the enthusiasm from me. I didn't feel the same thrill of intrigue I had previously, and now just wanted to get away from this place. I had a satellite messenger in my pack. I could cut this whole trip short and report my findings, calling for a rescue in the process. The satellite messenger was like a PLB, a personal locator beacon, except it had the added capability of sending a short text message in addition to issuing an SOS signal. The only drawback was that it required a greater view of the sky than a PBL did, and I was certain that if my GPS wasn't receiving a signal, the messenger wouldn't either. I holstered the handgun and secured the snap. I had almost forgotten I was still clutching it as I investigated the camp, but there didn't seem to be any immediate danger. Pulling the camera out, I took a photo inventory of the encampment, including the condition and content of the tents, and made note of my last updated coordinates, which were only a few hundred yards distant. When I got back, I'd be sure to pass the information to the authorities and let them investigate. Hopefully, it would turn out that there was nothing amiss and that the USGS personnel were all accounted for. But in the case that they were not so fortunate, this information might be valuable for rescue efforts. Satisfied that I had done what I could here, I turned my attention once again to the path, leaving the ravaged encampment behind me with an uncomfortable and inexplainable feel of being observed. The trail began to rise as I approached the western edge of the depression and then plateaued. I began to note with curiosity the black and red striped plastic ribbons tied around some of the trunks. I had seen all sorts of tree marks before, including those used by the USGS, but I didn't recall ever seeing any of that particular color combination. I briefly wondered at which a marker would mean to the USGS surveyors, but that thought was abruptly forgotten when I stepped around an exceptionally broad tree and was faced with hell. It took me a moment to really realize what I was seeing, as if my mind was rejecting the atrocity of it. When it finally clicked, I staggered, my world going gray, and I felt close to collapsing from the madness laid out before me. The bodies of two men had been stripped naked and lashed upside down to trees on either side of the path. Their bindings appeared to be made of thick black vines or roots, and had clearly been made while the men were still alive, as the cords had been drawn so tight as to have split the skin to their calves and ankles, spilling blood upon their legs and torsos. Their arms were splayed out to either side, made from what looked to be the repurposed branches of the tree in a grotesque and twisted abomination of a crucifix. This was not the worst of it, though, not by far. Their abdomens had been brutally torn open and emptied of their organs, which had been unceremoniously discarded at the base of the trees, in a pink-gray pile of viscera that still glistened in the muted afternoon light. Someone had then stuffed them full of pine needles and leaves to the point that the bodies were still straining with bloat, and crimson-stained vegetation protruding from their cavities. Their blood had painted their shoulders and heads completely red, and dried and clumped their dangling hair. My eyes dropped lower to their faces, and I saw that the men's eyes had been savagely torn out as well, and their empty eye sockets and gaping mouths likewise stuffed full of forest detritus to the point of overwhelming. At that moment, a foul wind rose, and upon it, I thought I could just make out the haunting tones of an inhuman whisper, reaching from my ears with a language never meant for the voices of men. Again, the world shifted before me, and I took a clumsy step backwards in shock, my feet tangling and dropping me hard on my tailbone. I sat there a long moment, chest heaving and heart pounding in my ears, before a voice in the back of my mind screamed at me to get on my feet and run. My senses returned then, and I was only glad to oblige. I leapt to my feet and ran with every ounce of strength I had, passing between the two obscene horrors and racing along the overgrown path. I had only covered 50 long strides before breaking abruptly out of the dense tree line and into a broad glade nearly 75 yards across. Unbelievably, even this large clearing was not enough to provide a break-in of the unrelenting canopy above. A fact I noted subconsciously, even as my eyes fell upon the new depraved scene before me. The center of the expanse had contained a single tree with oddly smooth and blackened bark, 10 feet in diameter, which had been felled and now laid upon the ground. Its length extended from the center of the clearing and stretched beyond the tree line far enough that I couldn't tell where it had ended. Seated in the circle surrounding the great stump were 6 more figures, 4 men and 2 women, all stripped naked and seated in a cross-legged fashion, leaning forward with their hands outstretched and resting atop the smooth surface like it was a massive round table around which they prayed. Scraps of their USCG uniforms littered the area, torn to rags and cast aside chaotically around them. Their naked backs were hashed with bleeding cuts, as if made by razors, and I could almost recognize patterns in the mangled flesh that recalled long-forgotten ruins or the letters of some unrecognizable language. I stepped forward almost unwillingly in a daze, forcing my feet to carry me closer to the obscene convention. Unlike the other bodies I found previously, these men and women seemed to still be alive and swaying minutely, as if joined in some communal and silent chant. As I closed to within a couple yards of the massive remains of the stump, my eyes were drawn to its surface, patterned with thousands upon thousands of tightly packed growth rings. Each seemed no thicker than the width of a needle. For an incongruous moment, my thoughts turned to astonishment, both at the incredibly slow growth this tree must have incurred, as well as the impossible age that the rings implied. As my gaze swept across its saw-scarred top, I realized that the entire center of the tree, the size of the manhole cover, was black as pitch and sickly hollow, as if the tree had been burnt from within thousands of years ago, leaving a void that surely would have killed it. Somehow, inexplicably, it had survived and continued to grow, year after year, century after century, millennia.
Extra Value Meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
Millennium after millennium. Until now. Looking around the darkened clearing, I observed some discarded equipment scattered about, and was surprised to find two long-bladed chainsaws nearly hidden by the knee-high grass. Some part of my brain tried to realize why the USGS would travel all this way to remove this ancient tree, but the question was a small one, and was quickly eclipsed when I looked closer at the men and women. Their eyes were gone, but unlike their companions I had found earlier, they had not been torn out, but rather scorched from their skulls by some intense flame. It was as if someone had taken a road flare to each of them, and I could see clearly the blackened flesh surrounding the empty and cauterized sockets. Their mouths agape open limply, wider than unbroken jaws should be permitted, and I couldn't imagine the pain that must have even now racked their bodies. But if they felt it, felt anything, they showed no sign of it. Their eyeless gaze fixed on the black abyss in the center of the impossible base. I crept closer, my right hand moving to rest on the butt of my holster magnum, and my left reaching out unbidden to the closest of them, a young girl with short brown hair and slight build. I didn't want to touch her. I didn't want to touch any of them, but I couldn't overcome this need to understand and try to help them if I could. The moment my fingers made contact with the feverishly hot skin of her shoulder, I knew I had made a mistake. At once, the circle of men and women ceased their movement, and the one that I had reached out to turns her slightest gaze to meet my own, a chill rippling like cold lightning through my veins. In that instant, I knew there was nothing of life left in any of them. I didn't understand what was happening, but no humanity remained in their faces, as if they were no more than empty husks or damaged automations, endlessly repeating the last command they had been given. All thoughts vanished when she started screaming, though. It was horrific. The scream of the damned, or of a demon. It was pitched higher than I would have thought possible, and seemed to reverberate through the forest around us. The air shook and vibrated with its assault, and I clampered my hands over my ears to try to dampen the hellish wail. I could feel consciousness start to escape me, felt the trickles of blood from my ears slip between my fingers, but still the scream continued. It came ceaselessly, without pause, without breath, without mercy. I stumbled away, vomiting into the grass as I fled. My ears burned with a pain I couldn't have imagined, until suddenly, everything went silent. My vision blurred and a ripping ache wound through my brain like a white-hot brand. That was the last sound I ever heard. Somehow, my directionless flight led me beyond the far side of the clearing and into the tree line. All thoughts gone as my body operated on base instinct. Survival. My feet ran without command. My hands pushed aside underbrush and branches alike without direction. I don't know how long I fled. Minutes? Hours? I only remember emerging from the forest into a wide open field and into the bright warmth of the late afternoon sunlight. Somehow, my fingers found the satellite messenger, still clipped to my pack, and activated the SOS beacon. After that, I had only fragmented memories of falling to the ground and later of being transported in a rescue helicopter. Later still with the memories of the hospital, of the doctors, and then of the mental institution. That was a year ago, and I've made great strides since then. My vision has mostly returned to my right eye, though I have little more than blurry shadows in the other. My hearing is gone, and the doctors tell me there is no hope for recovery there. Whatever damage was done had been severe enough to nearly liquefy the nerves, eardrum, and cochlea in each ear. My mind is a bit fragile still, and I have to be careful about forcing myself to recall memories of that day. Sometimes, like now, as I write this, I can distance myself from it, pretend like it's just a story that I'm telling about someone else. But if I push too hard or force myself to accept that this actually happened to me, I will suffer a grand mal seizure and fall into a catatonic state for days on end. I gave my story to the authorities, along with the GPS tracking and my camera. I'm told that they spent a month combing those woods, using my GPS data to try to find the locations I had told them about. They found the old ranger station, and it sounds like it's a mystery, even to them. They also found the USGS campsite, just as I described it, but that's it. No bodies. No black-skinned tree old enough to have seen the dawn of mankind. No eyeless USGS surveyors. Nothing. They gave up the search after two of their rangers went missing, deeming the area too dangerous to continue SNR operations. The old river trail is now restricted, and the area known as Legion Gate has been enclosed with miles of tall chain-link fencing atop with razor wire. I'm told it's to prevent anyone else from falling victim to an extremely dangerous natural environment, as they've termed it. I don't go into the woods anymore. I get anxious and suffer severe panic attacks if I even drive too close to a forested area. My hands get clammy, and my breathing starts to hitch if I turn the TV on and see an image of a tree line. I've since moved to a metropolitan area in the southwest, surrounded by hundreds of miles of concrete and desert. I'm on permanent disability now, and do part-time work at a local retail shop to keep busy. But it hasn't left me completely. I could still hear the scream. Why can I still hear the scream?